This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Welcome to the Shakti Hour, a podcast on Ram Dass's Be Here Now network, where I speak with women about their personal experience on the spiritual path. My name is Melanie, and I'm very excited to share the next podcast guest with you, Mukti, a teacher from Open Gate Sangha, who I found through her husband Adyashanti's teachings and have become a huge fan of Mukti, as well as specifically her book, A Self in Full Bloom. It's an audiobook. And I was really excited to get a chance to get on her schedule and have some time with her. And I have to admit that I feel like I was a bit out of my league because the transmission and the teachings that she was giving me through our interview were so profound for me in the experience of receiving them. I feel like I maybe fumbled a bit in my questioning and my responses because I was so engaged in listening to the wisdom of what she was saying and really receiving the teachings from her. So I hope that you can do that as well, that you can have that experience in listening back to our conversation, of tuning in deeply to what she had to share and what she had to offer. I want to let you know, too, that I've started a Patreon page for the Shakti Hour where I'm leaving some recorded meditations, some reflections, deeper reflections from me on some of the podcasts, some chants, and other special things where we can engage a little bit more deeply with some of the insights and topics that are coming up through this series here on the network. And it's a great interface, I find, just for being able to have posts and conversations kind of specific to the Shakti Hour. And you can engage at no cost with the majority of the things, or you can also sign on as a patron at different levels and receive special monthly rewards for doing so. You can also go to the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com, and you'll find there the links to Mukti's website and all of her upcoming offerings. And you can also please remember to subscribe to the Shakti Hour on iTunes. And if you're enjoying what you're hearing, you can leave us a positive review. Thanks so much for listening. And now please enjoy this talk with Mukti. So I'm here today with Mukti, and I'm here to talk with her about some of the non-dual teachings that she's a part of, and just to explore being present and finding a way into the inner world through the feminine with a female voice, and also just in the harmony of the wholeness that contemplative practice and inquiry practice can bring. And so, Mukti, thank you so much again for being here with me to share in that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you might just share with the audience a little bit about your personal evolution spiritually. I know a bit about it with you studying Yogananda and in Chinese healing and yoga practice, and then moving on to studying with Adyashanti. But maybe you could give us just a little background of your own evolution in as a spiritual seeker.
Okay, sure. Well, more of the historical background you've just given. The only addition I might make is that I was born into a Catholic family, Irish Catholic family. And so I was kind of part of a larger tribe of many, many folks who were of that tradition. And I went through Catholic schooling for all my education through university until I studied Chinese medicine. But at a young age, my father became interested in Yogananda's teachings. I was about 7. So I was exposed to those teachings also in tandem with my Catholic upbringing. So part of the evolution came from, you know, having a sense of something greater than myself, a sense of being in service to God, a sense of a devotional practice, a practice of service, which was very much emphasized both in the type of Catholicism I was brought up in, as well as Yogananda's teachings, and also to develop an inner life, a contemplative life. And so when I came across Chinese medicine, and also simultaneously about the same time I met Adya, I started having some more input into my spiritual context. And I think that Chinese medicine really opened within me a capacity to bring my awareness to a more kinesthetic level, on the level of touch and feel, and to trust my intuition, but also a medicine that is also founded in observation and actual indicators for diagnosing patterns and the way energy might move or become stuck. And I think that this kind of tactile, kinesthetic awareness developed in that also helped me when I was studying with Adya open to a sense of awareness of the world as it exists apart from the overlay of thought or emotion. And that was a big emphasis of Adya was to really sense, you know, what is it that's aware of our experience that's ever present. And so I think it took the evolution part. I think it took a sense of God outside of myself or within my heart into a specific kind of sensing of spirit, you could say, as the eyes of awareness, or maybe in Catholicism, they might say like the eyes of the Holy Spirit, just gave me a different sense and actually enriched my understanding of the traditions that I'd come from, of Yogananda's teachings or Catholicism. It just gave them another dimension that felt like it was really founded in direct experience of the mystery of what we are. That's prior to any dogma or doctrine or any kind of belief structure that I had been exposed to in my earlier tradition. So Adya was kind of peeling that off and stripping away those parts of my spirituality so I could look underneath them, or to sense something more essential, as in the expression of awareness and the mystery of what we are and how that's sensed immediately and directly.
I'm getting the sense, as you're sharing your story, of this real, very rich spiritual fabric kind of that was laid at a in the foundation in your life, with Catholicism being a very rich tradition of ritual and you know, depth, and then to add to that the Yogananda teachings, and this fabric and this textures and this layering, the simultaneous layering of it and then the stripping away. And I know in A Self in Bloom, that audiobook of yours that I really love, is that you mention something that was very interesting to me about your story, is that you and Adya were a pair before he began teaching. And you talk about that moment, you tell the story of the moment on the way to his first talk. Can you give us a little bit about that moment? I'm seeing it coming out of this fabric, so maybe you could share from that point.
Yes. Well, when Adya was asked to teach by his teacher, and we arranged for a place that he could hold a meeting, a kind of a meeting space, we were driving to that the first night that he was going to be teaching, and I realized that I didn't have a clear sense of where I would fit in to the evening, as far as I hadn't really been a person of the Zen tradition that he came from and that his teacher was from. I had been to a few Zen meetings, maybe a handful, just to get a sense of his tradition, but I didn't really know a lot about it or about how he would go about it, given that, you know, we weren't going to a Zen temple or to something well established. And so I thought, wow, you know, what part will I play in? And as I mentioned, I'd kind of come from a training of being of service. And so my first thought was, you know, how can I help? How can I help support this evening? And so that's what I asked him as we were driving in the car. You know, I said, you know, what would you like me to, how would you like me to show up? How can I be of support and help tonight? And he just got quiet. And it was a real pregnant pause that he gave and expressed, which was a bit unusual. I didn't know that I had ever quite seen him pause with such intent and deep, deep quietude. And then he simply said, just be yourself. And if you can hear this, you know, each of us listening, if you can just hear this pointer, just be yourself. Just be yourself. Then you can get a sense of my first teaching from Adya as my teacher. You know, I hadn't considered him my teacher before that, but in that moment, it just occurred, and I realized that this was one of the pointers of my life.
Did that idea of a partner being a teacher, you know, beyond the yoga of relationship, beyond the grist for the mill of any, you know, intimate relationship, had that occurred to you before, of working with your partner as guru, as teacher, as guide?
Never. It never had even occurred to me. Yeah, and even in that moment, it actually didn't occur to me, believe it or not. It's only in hindsight that I realized that that was the moment he became my teacher, I feel like.
And it's so profound. I mean, for me, the when I hear that, initially, there's a lot of ego noise around it. Like, well, how do I present myself? Or who am I really? Like, it's not the depth that it hit you at in that moment, you know, is not necessarily, you know, my first reaction to that request.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about that. I think many of us have heard the phrase, hey, just be yourself, you know, many times in our life. And I think that there's moments where we hear things and there's moments when we just really deeply let something in. You would deeply digest them and they just land in a totally different way, even though they're the exact same, you know, set of string of words. And I think it was because of the transmission and the silence and the emphasis from which they came. It just carried this this energy that even the pregnant pause just carried this energy of this is what he's about to say is something to really deeply, deeply listen to. And then in that space of receptivity, it just got in. But I have to say that even as it got in and I knew that it was absolutely like revolutionary, even though the words were very ordinary, my mind did kind of like a couple minutes later register what was happening. And it was a mix of things that I was registering. You know, at some level, I was like, just elated, like, wow, what freedom, what permission, wow. And almost at the same time was also this feeling of like, what the hell is that? Like, how do I be myself? Like, I don't even know if I actually know what that is to be myself. Like, 100% just be myself, not supposed to be, you know, like helping them out tonight, not, you know, being a hostess or, you know, not being a participant or, I mean, not that those roles won't happen. But at an essential level, to put being myself first and foremost before all other doings and roles and ideas, I just thought, wow, like I actually don't even know what that is. And that's why it was great teaching, because it opened this inquiry of, gosh, what is it to be authentically and genuinely what I actually am? And the excitement of that opened in me, even though I didn't even know what it is. But that's what's so fantastic about the mystery of what we are is that it's absolutely unknowable, and yet we want to know it. And so it opens us to a certain order of knowing that's not in mind. You know, it's not all together the same.
I'm sorry. I just see that moment also for all of us. You know, for all of us that have followed the evolution of the teachings from both of you, that moment really was this. It feels to me like this moment of opening into this whole new path. You know, he was going to give his first talk and you were opening into this embodiment of basically the teaching, you know, for us, you know, opening that whole thing for all of us who have then come to, you know, listen and study and bask in that process. That's one thing that comes up for me. And I love these little I love how these moments are there, you know, in the flow of the energy of life and how we can see them more and more as we practice. But I'm curious about, and that was what, in the 90s, sometime in the 90s, right? So
I was in 96, fall of 96.
Okay, so there's been some time. So can you maybe give a little picture of the path of your understanding of that? I mean, now you offer the teaching so clearly as what that is, but can you remember how that unfolded for you over time from then until now?
I'd be happy to talk about that. Is there any kind of particular vein you'd like me to speak in, or
You know, I mean, let's see. I guess actually what I'm really curious about is then in the relationship. So your relation, not only did your relationship to yourself change in that moment, but it also shifted in your relationship to your partner. And so I'm curious maybe how that unfolded in relationship as you moved forward. Is that helpful to give more of a through line?
Yeah, it's helpful. I'll have to do my best to make it relevant as well, because, you know, not everybody in the audience is, you know, married to their teacher. So I could speak to that a little bit, but I want to make it really relevant for people.
But I do think that people go on. I do think that anyone in a partnership or in any relationship, when you have your own spiritual awakening, that does affect how you are relating to your partner and that evolution. So, yeah,
absolutely. Well said. Mm-hmm. And that would be the point of relevancy too, to aim for. Well, I'd say that, I'll just kind of maybe cover this in a couple different ways. So it may seem like at first I'm not answering the question about relationship, but I think at the relationship with myself to this pointer, you know, just be yourself. I think what was wonderful about that is as I opened to Ajahn's teachings that evening and in, you know, the 20 years after that, I still listened to his teachings. You know, I feel that he was giving the lay of the land, some context for my mind and my whole being to enter this arena of what is it is to awaken to our nature as awareness. And we could say awareness as spirit that, you know, takes the expression of presence and moves in our life. And so even though I had some context for that already, he was laying it in a new way. And so as I was really becoming curious about how consciousness expresses through the light of awareness, how it perceives the world, and sensing presence, I was also in tandem questioning about my sense of who I am personally because of this pointer, just be yourself. So it was kind of this wonderful pairing of what is it to be an authentic human being and also what is it to be an expression of spirit. And so I had these two side by side all along, I think, at some level, as I was hearing his teachings, and he would include, you know, the human aspect into his teachings, but he also was, especially in his early teachings, was placing a big emphasis on discovering who is it that's living this life? What is it that's looking out your eyes? What is it that knows that you exist or that you're here? And just really, really driving home this initial foundation for one's life is why don't we, instead of concentrating on what we do and, you know, what to engage in, might we ask who and what is it that is engaging and is informing doing? And so I have this kind of pairing, as I said, as I was looking inside, what am I really? Like, what is it to be myself? To be myself, I have to know what I am. And so this is kind of where the sense of the two met, meaning the two, knowing myself as spirit, but knowing what it is to be a genuine human being, they met with the question, who is living this life? And so, or what is it that's living this life, if you prefer that question. And so that's been the main hub of these, 20 years is just that. That is the question that at a certain point became very pivotal for me when I recognized that his pointer of ego or illusionary self is defined by movement of grasping and aversion. Grasping for what we want, pushing away what we don't want, defense, offense, defense. And so when I took up the inquiry question, what is stillness? That was leading me to a sensing into that which is not defined by grasping and aversion. And that really opened the doorway for me to kind of resetting of my whole being in stillness. To where it was almost like rebooting a computer where all the software programs, go offline, everything that has been input as far as like how we know ourselves and our history and our past and our conditioning, it all kind of went offline in stillness. And then I had this reboot, which we could call an awakening. And it's as though none of the programs were operating yet. And I was just the essential instrument of life. And so in that moment, I realized that, oh, this is what I am, that is prior to ideas and definitions and, that's empty of all the comings and goings of time, history, and future. And it's empty of all that. It doesn't reference time. It doesn't reference a space, because it's not moving to know itself here or there. It's just very still. And so I got sense of who and what we are that is prior to these constructs. And in that moment, there was a recognition. And yet, some of the programs came back online. Some didn't. Some never really came back. But many of the programs came back online, and I became almost a hybrid of who I was before that moment and who I was in that moment. Meaning, I had a sense of myself as the infinite that is not bound by definitions of time or space. You could say our nature is the infinite or as eternity. And yet I still had the same kind of remembrance of history and patterning, and many things reappear. But then the question, what am I, took on a little different tone.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the question in light of everything, every program that was kind of coming back online. Is this really what I am, or is it authentic to engage in this? Does it feel genuine or true? And could it be like a program to express through, but perhaps in a different way that feels more genuine and authentic? And so the what am I question took action more in relationship, right? Relationship to avenues of expression or conditioning, you could say. And then that came into play with relationship with others, right? So, when I have certain patterns relating to others, and this is now the other layer that you were getting to, how do I know what feels true and resonant a kind of alignment within myself that's not prone to grasping or pushing away, but resides in a greater sense of stillness and alignment? And how might I move in relationship that supports that alignment and expression of this essential sort of signature that took up resonance in me of spirit, which was more of a transmission of stillness. So, you know, different people kind of have different flavors of spirit or expressions of spirit, but that was kind of the hallmark for me that I continue to come back to. And so this isn't a static kind of stillness. It's just a stillness that is more free from grasping and aversion. Hmm. And so, but it doesn't mean it doesn't move or it can't express. And so that was really my touchstone for when things might go, you know, cattywampus in relating, or, you know, kind of go awry, or there might be a triggering within myself. I would have to really shine the still light of awareness that we all can look through and into these patterns. And for me, I was very kinesthetic at this point. So I'd drop into my body and just really attune and listen and sense and feel patterns, and until I could kind of tease them out and see what in them had wisdom and what in them had reactivity or illusion and confusion, and try to parse it all out and then align with what was most true, and essentially try to liberate and catch up the parts of myself that were operating out of great misunderstanding or lack of clarity, to almost like transmute those or free them from those worldviews and perspectives, and kind of free up that energy so that it could move in a more healthy way. So that's what I did in relationships of all sorts, and in partnership, it was pretty similar for me. I think for me, and this may relate to your interest in women, I can't say that I'm like all women, but I know I'm like many women in that there were still in my generation more, kind of more influence of having the man be the leader in the outer world, at least if like one may have came from a matriarchal family, but kind of in society, you know, it has been more patriarchal, at least in the United States. And so with this kind of conditioning, I had kind of learned through modeling to be a support person, or kind of be more in the background, mm-hmm. and to really be in service to my man, you know, or my partner. And so I think what happened in awakening was some of those structures fell away, and at least they were suspended for a while. So when they came back online, I really had to look at how I would take kind of maybe be in the background more. And I had to challenge myself to allow spirit to move the way it was responding to all of life around me, and to join in that and not hang back. And so I think that changed in our relationship, my relationship with Adi and I more. And I still have a lot of the traditional in me. I just happen to be a makeup or an incarnation that really suits well to that, but it doesn't define me in the same way. So I can, you know, I can be very independent and, you know, step out of that that support role and you know, step forward. And but I can also step back and be more the support person. And I'm pretty fluid in that. Mm-hmm. Whereas some people, maybe in their expression, they would just recognize that, oh, that's kind of not what their incarnation's about. You know, maybe it's more, you know, stepping forward and being a leader more full time.
Yeah, but the key to that being the authenticity, that your question, what's the authentic way for spirit to express itself in this moment? And it's not just a casting off of everything because it's old or because it's conditioned, it's a clearing away to have the authentic vision, have the space for that to then take shape. And mm-hmm. that could be, yeah, I'll take that back. I'll take that back. And that's done. And I love the way that you were describing that. And for those of you that are just listening, the visual, really, there was hand gestures and showing the parting of the curtains and the moving away of certain things. And it's just it's a beautiful arc, a beautiful arc, the way that you just shared that. There was another segment you wanted to get to. So
I don't know actually exactly where to go. There's 20 years is a long time, and I have to say that Adi and I are pretty unusual, I think. Who knows, really, but I believe so from all the people I've talked to, in that there's that segment of our lives where the two of us are in partnership. It's probably the easiest segment of our entire lives. Uh-huh. So he and I happen to be exceedingly compatible, and we're quite different, but we're very compatible. And so we haven't had a lot of working out of things in our marriage. And so I know that people just love to hear like how our relationship changed a lot, after my awakening, or his for that matter. And there wasn't a lot of change. And I think it's because of, who we were when we came to the relationship. And I think I could say this, that I was greatly influenced by Yogananda's teachings on spiritual marriage. And in his teachings, he really spoke about all the different ways that people can meet in partnership. Some people have shared hobbies or interests or shared degree of intellect and smarts. And, some people connect in a more physical chemistry level. There's so many different ways that people attract. But Yogananda felt that for spiritual marriage, people really had to meet at a place of a shared intention for their spiritual life. Mm-hmm. And that's really where Adi and I met. And I think it's because I set that for sure. And I think he did at some level too, as like the pivotal criteria for a marriage that we would enter into. And so I think that really set this tone that, and also because of the traditions we came from, we learned how to be in service. So marriage was being in service to each other and in service to the relationship and being more conscious. And, like from Christianity, it would be more Christ-like, or, maybe from more of an Advaita perspective or Zen perspective, it would be more conscious. And so because that was what we were organized around, I think that it really informed the harmony of our marriage. And especially because we also were people that really were trained that when things came up in ourselves, you take it inside, you take it to your meditation cushion, you address your own issues. And it's not that we didn't talk about some things together, because we did, but I don't think we had a tendency to put things that went awry off on one another. We always have just a basic interest in what is our part in this. How can we support relating together? So that was true before either of us even had awakenings. Right. And so I think awakening just enhances whatever's there.
Right. It's the shining of the light on that, or the slowing down, the idea of stillness. When you're still, it's clear what's happening, or the shining of the light, it highlights what's already happening. So those transformations that can occur in relationship are, you're seeing more clearly what's already there. But to that idea, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate your honesty about your own, makeup and holding that as you know, what is true for you and authentic for you. And in holding that authenticity, mm-hmm. it's strong. And I think that, there's so much that comes up, but, maybe you could speak a little bit more to, you talked about the intention that you both brought to marriage, and you speak a lot about intention in mm-hmm. spiritual practice as well. And, I'm curious about how you relate to intention in this moment. I know that it's kind of a buzzword at this time, you know, having an intention, setting your intention and da 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 da. But how does it flow for you in the moment?
Right now?
Sure.
Okay. or in any moment.
In any moment, as it, you know, yeah.
Why don't I share what the intention was for the marriage, because it might be helpful.
Okay.
When I was listening to these teachings of Yogananda's on spiritual marriage, he mentioned an intention that I really resonated with. And Yogananda said the purpose of spiritual marriage is so that, in his day and age, they spoke of husband and wife, you know, could be, you know, partner and partner. But in his day and age, they said husband and wife. So he said the purpose is that each person in the marriage discovers that the one, meaning capital O, like you could say God, but he said that the one in my husband or life, the one in my husband or wife is the same one in all of life. So just to kind of recognize spirit deeply in one person, and then to discover that that is the spirit in all of life. You know, and so this is kind of the intention that I took. I never necessarily boiled my intention for my marriage down into a sentence before I got married. But I know that that statement of Yogananda's really hit home with me. And I thought, that is it. This is the course of my life. Hmm. Like, my marriage will be this arena where I might be particularly devoted to knowing, you know, spirit in my partner. But that is only kind of one entry point for this interest in knowing spirit everywhere.
And that's the bhakti tradition too. You know, the bhakti tradition that I come from with Ram Dass is, you know, seeing love in the other, seeing God in the other, you know.
Yeah, I think that my intention, the way I would present it, has changed over the years, and it can even change in a given hour or a given day. But I feel that essentially now my intention is kind of wordless, but it is pretty kinesthetic for me. It's people talk about aligning with an intention. And for me, it's now more of just like a sense of alignment energetically. Mm-hmm. So,
can you speak to what that feels like, or how, what that, can you speak to what that feels like?
Yeah, I think that at least for myself, and I think this is true of many people, but I have a lot of training in, as you know, background in Chinese medicine, but I have a training in Qigong and Tai Chi, and you know, there's this energy pole that they speak of, the Tai Chi pole that runs from the crown of the head down through the center of the body in front of the spine, you know, down. And it's this vertical axis. And through all my years of meditating on the Hara Center, which is, you know, in the lower abdomen area, it's an energy center there. Sometimes I call it the gateway to stillness. There's this sense that I have of this kind of energetic alignment, and this ballast in the Hara. And it's kind of like, I don't know if some of you remember those blow up clowns that we had when we were young, kind of in the shape of a bowl. And you could punch him down and then the clown would pop back up. But there was a way that this clown would kind of move like this and then it would come back into alignment straight up. Well, that's sort of how I feel inside most of the time, where, you know, I'll kind of know like, oh, life's leaning this way or it's leaning that way. But I can kind of come back, you know, to center like this. But if I get like a kink, you know, like, ooh, that doesn't feel right, or that feels off, or ooh, that misses the mark, or hey, that's right on the mark, or that really resonates, I kind of register it in this energy body. And so pretty much my nonverbal intention is just how do I be in harmony with this alignment, which seems to serve being in harmony with the whole. So
I do want to ask you then more about this exploration of the masculine and feminine, because I know you do, you talk about it, and I want to ask about that in terms of that kind of alignment and how you relate feminine and masculine principle, or I don't know what to call it, you know, to that idea of finding that balance and alignment.
Yes, well, I think in general, you know, if we were to speak of the yin and the yang, you know, the yin being the feminine principle, yang being the masculine, I think it's this kind of blending of, you know, open receptivity, which is often more trusting, more kind of relaxed. And we blend that feminine principle with the masculine expression, which is more of strength and, you know, precision, and it's more directed, it's more dynamic, more fiery. And so I think that this balance is a balance of both. You know, it's very much being here. I am present, you know, I am engaged, which is yang, right? Mm-hmm. And it's more vertical. And it's awake and it's, you know, ready, you know, but it's also yin, which is I'm listening, I'm receiving, I'm, you know, available, I'm fluid, I'm, you know, I can be, you know, malleable and appropriate, you know, to the moment. And it's this blend, because you know, when we have too much of one without the other, then we're not getting really addressing things in a whole way. Within each personality, like within my personality, I tend to, you know, go more yin or be more yin than yang. But there's certainly moments where, you know, I'm definitely more in a yang mode or expressing in a more really direct or even fierce sometimes way. But it's not really my natural mode to, you know, really be, you know, really on and, you know, rigid all, not rigid, but energized all the time. But
is
yeah,
that something
yeah,
that your hopefully. Relationship to those two, your relationship to those two aspects, did that change through this awakening time when you were asking about being yourself? Did your relationship to those aspects
yes.
shift? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The biggest shift was in the beginning. I think that I had some notion that awakening would sort of come to me, almost as though there was a God outside of myself that would somehow grant me awakening. And so I think I was very much in a spirituality of listening, being very receptive, very faith-based. I was just happened to be a more trusting person, kind of a great trust in God and life. And Adya is a very young expression. He especially came from a path of will and hard work and tremendous amounts of meditating and discipline and questioning, really delving into things. And I could feel in him that this was a person who, was not hanging back and waiting for something to happen. And I could really feel by his example, like, wow, I need to be 100% all in with this. I'm not applying myself as much as I could. And so that was the biggest shift. And it actually was facilitated even more when when Adya actually at one point thought we might enjoy going or might be meaningful to go see Gangaji, who's another teacher. And I ended up speaking to Gangaji shortly thereafter in a small group meeting, and she really recognized this in me. And she really was basically gave me the message of, you got to get on with it, honey. Get on with it. Get off the fence. You're hanging back. And the way her energy came into me, it was with such fire and fierceness that it really lit a fire in me. And I had to really bring in that yang energy and take my own spirituality by the reins and really delve in and look at, what is it that I've been assuming and believing will happen or not happen? And, what's the cost of that? And, what do I need to just sort of filter out as not helping? And, what beliefs or practices or notions, am I going to try to keep that I feel may be more true than illusionary?
And so which really ones helpful. Did you kind of grab onto in that moment, or what, how did the yang then kind of take foot?
Well, I was definitely influenced heavily by Adya, whose real rally call was truth. So is this true? Can I know that this is true? And I think that the biggest moment of that for me was when I asked myself, is it true that awakening is possible? For me, like, I could see it in Gangaji, I could see it in Adya, but I wanted to know, like, is it actually possible for me? And I think that what I came to inside was probably a good blending of yin and yang. If we think of truth as a little bit more yang, like the stark reality of things that type, I mean, truth is so many more things than that, but I came to this moment of real sobriety. But it was also a kind of surrender, which we might think of as yin. And what I came to was, I don't know what this life will be for me. I don't know if awakening will come to pass. But I do know that my deepest desire is to accept the life that I'm given and to live it to the fullest. So however spirituality goes or however deep my understanding goes, I will step into that and I will embrace that and I will be grateful for that gift. If it goes as far as, awakening, so be it. If it doesn't, so be it. And what was beautiful about that moment was that I could feel in myself that that alignment with whatever it is felt like it was maybe even a more important gift than whatever this awakening thing might be.
Yeah, I can feel that here just in hearing the story. I feel that in that empowerment, that ownership, that stepping into that wholeness. of the moment. I'm feeling that just from hearing this story from you. I'm empowered just hearing that story. Yeah.
And in a sense, looking back, it's not so different than awakening or the embodiment of awakening, because it is all about aligning with what is and stepping into that and being being present in that. And so I didn't know that then, but in a sense, that wisdom came from enlightened expression. And so regardless of whether or not we have a moment of awakening or a big shift, we can be operating from the deepest thing within us, which is aligning with our enlightenment and wisdom.
Did you have any grief in that moment when you were transmitted the fire of, was there any sense of grief around surrendering that receptive, faith-based, trusting, whole thing? Maybe it sounds like it was quite a transmission, so maybe not.
You mean surrendering the idea that I might not awaken?
No, I mean the one mode of being, the way of being receptive and faith-based and trusting.
I don't know that I surrendered. I think surrender was an expression of that.
Right.
But I think it married a kind of clarity, which was more Jung. It joined with a kind of clarity and clear seeing that, oh, I don't know. That's the most truthful thing I can say. I don't know how this will be. And yet I'm going to step into it anyway, which was also, kind of a more active, Jung.
Courageous, willing to take a risk. Yeah. So it was more of a transformation and an integration than a letting go of.
I think so.
I have so many more things I want to touch with you, but we've been for a while, but there's two things I want to get to quickly, if I can, with you. There was a talk that you gave a bit ago, and forgive me for not knowing which one it is, but you're talking about the paradigm of being that is not me-centered. And you asked this question, what in my experience is free of wanting right now? And I just, in this moment, in this cultural moment, in our country, where there's so much division and polarity, I just love this question. what is there in my being that is not me centered as a spiritual directive? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I don't remember the talk you're referring to, because there's so many different ways to speak to this, but what comes to me now is that it feels like this definition that I mentioned earlier, that when I heard Adya speak of ego as grasping and aversion, I think that that's a great entry point to this question, because if we take the definition of me, it can mean so many things, but the kind of me that tends to breed suffering is this habit of grasping and aversion. Grasping and aversion is going to be part of our experience no matter what degree of realization. It's a movement of life. We know when something resonates and we know when it doesn't. But when we identify with that and it concretizes as solidifying this identity of a me that has an investment in entrenching itself in what it's pushing against or grasping for, such that all the energy is contained in that and not free to see other possibilities, then we have suffering. And so I feel like the question of you know, what is it to know who we are that's not me-centered, and to sense what it is to be and live that is, I think, something that we can feel our way to by sensing what is outside of grasping and aversion. So we, as a simple, really simple exercise, we can just, if we can get to the point of observing that we're, you know, that we're pushing or that we're pulling or straining, you know, even just in our posture, you know, as we walk down the street or, you know, as we sit here with our shoulders, you know, or whatever it might be, we can just notice where there's grasping or where there's pushing away. And when we're recognized that there's something outside of that that's noticing it, we can rest into what's looking or what's observing it, and we can sense, oh, this is not defined by grasping and aversion at all. So that's one entry point to get a feel or a taste of that which is not defined by grasping and aversion. But we could also, you know, maybe look from our, the eyes of our heart and just sort of be aware of our heart and, you know, listen from our heart and perceive the world from our heart. And we can feel that the heart doesn't take sides, you know, that there might be parts of our human heart that are holding to certain things or, you know, very much attached to certain things. But there's also this kind of soft heart of spirit that really is very unconditional. And it's not, it doesn't have a storyline about what should or shouldn't be. It's showing up for the whole thing. And also, you know, as this sense of just being where it drops down into, you know, the heart center, it's you know, more, it can reach a point of just being very anchored there and very still. It can even open to that which is unmoving, even when our human experience has preferences or wants or dislikes. You know, there's some part of us that is always never okay. You know, that can be known in the midst of that. And so, you know, I go into these things in more depth in other talks, you know, than I could go into now, but these are just general sketches.
Yeah, those were really helpful, and I think you gave us really three kind of specific ways that could come into that practice of a paradigm of being that is not me-centered, and to the idea of attachment, the grasping, and just, I love the idea of back to your, the clown, the blow up clown analogy of just sensing into that center point. And you can feel, even like you said, in your body, how your posture is leaning towards the desire for things to be one way or another versus sensing into the center and knowing all is whole. So I have asked all of my guests to offer a specific piece of advice to women and girls on the spiritual path. I offer that to you now, if something comes to mind.
Okay. Yes. I think that there's an important question that we have to ask all of us, men and women, but I think it's more than time for women to bring it forward. And I think it's a question of where does power live within us? And I think that society and the collective has its way of presenting how power looks culturally. And there's a way that power is wielded that's not effective. And it may seem strong, but it's not founded in things that are sustainable and serving well-being. And so I think that it's a hugely important inquiry question for us, is what is a power that is truly effective? And how do we sense that power from within ourselves? And for myself, I feel like I've taken a page, from martial arts or disciplines or yoga, where this hara center, this lower energy center, just below the navel, is developed to give us a very specific access to a universal power that can be resident in our own instrument. And I think that that power, the more it's cultivated, the more it is available as an energy that can inform our expression, and just it can rise up and respond and rectify when things are off. And I think a lot of times women fear their internal power because we haven't been encouraged to express it to the same degree that men have. And so I think that it's valuable to really rest in our being and settle into ourselves, so that all the energy that's extended into things that are extraneous and really not so important, that it can be freed up and return home, so that we can be more self-possessed and self-resourced, and that energy can settle in our relaxation of being downward, like with gravity, and really settle into a sense of gravitas that can be at the ready for when we're responding to life, or when we're initiating some things that are very, very important. So that would be my...
That's fantastic. And just in the benefit of this role that I am playing as podcast host is that I get to experience that transmission of that teaching in the moment, and then pass it on to everyone who's listening. But I really got lost actually in that rooting into that center in myself, and what a relief that is to have that access to that. And that weighted, that gravitas, like you said, that weight. And also just, I love that you offered that question to all of us, like what is power, or where are we sourcing power? What did you say? Do you remember?
Yeah.
Is that it? You said it right at the beginning when you started.
That's very close. It's something like, what's our sense of authentic
power.
Power that's within us.
Yeah.
That, it's not something that we take in from the outside, according to societal messages or media or even the patriarchal model. It's a discovery. That's the question: is what is it to discover our own authentic power and our seed of power? And it's actually not truly even ours. In a really personal way, it's what is it to know power and the seed of power, so that we can be instruments for that.
Yeah, I spoke with an author Terry Tempest Williams. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her work, but she spoke about power, not a power over, but a power with. And you're bringing it to power, the power within, and then the power through. So that awakening to, yes, to that. Yeah. And I just want to encourage everybody to go to mukdisource.org and find the beautiful catalog of all of the recordings of Mukti's teachings. We'll have links to all of that on the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com. Links to purchase those and to find out more about her offerings. And you do have lots of satsangs and some silent retreats coming up over the next year. I know several in California, and I even noticed you're going to be in England in the summer, which will be, if you happen to be listening from the UK, you can catch Mukti there in August. And and I thank you so much, Mukti. I really could talk to you for several hours, but maybe we can speak again at a further date. But I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your attention and sharing of your own experience and the teachings.
Thank you, Melanie, and thank you as well for the role you're taking and for inviting me here today. And just want to end with one last phrase, because you were talking about this power with, power in, yeah, power through. I think what could cap it nicely is a sense of what I'm speaking of is the power of the whole. So I think it could be a very beautiful balm or salve for the power of division. So that'll be just sort of my rally call at the end here, is for the power of the whole.
The power of the whole. I really love that. Thank you so much again, Mukti.
Okay, blessings to everybody.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/BeHereNow.